Spurs state and federal leaders are talking a lot about getting back to normal and starting up portions of the economy. But public health officials are warning that without a known vaccine for COVID-19 and adequate testing, the novel coronavirus could be with us for quite a while. How and when the pandemic will end depends on a lot of factors. Dr. Jonathan Tepti is the Associate Dean for Public Health and Community Engagement at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. He's also chair of the Wisconsin Council on Immunization Practices. Dr. Tepti, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, Rob. Great to be with you again.
Well, there are a lot of different possible futures here for this disease. Let's start by talking about the prospects for a vaccine. From what we know about this virus, how vaccinable is it in the world of viruses, some of which we have great vaccines for, some of which, like HIV, we've been working for 20 years on?
Well, I think that is the million-dollar question right now. There are, as of today, I think about 115 candidate vaccines, and 78 of those are in active development. You have to go down, though, that only about 5 of those have actually entered any human testing at this point in time. So the long and short is that we are hopeful there will be a vaccine that is both safe and effective, but there's a lot of work between now and getting to that point.
And it could be a case like a flu vaccine that makes a big difference, but we have to keep revising it each year, or vaccines, I should say, revising them each year. And they give a certain percentage help, but they're not slam dunks. That is one possible outcome of all of this. Is that right?
That's exactly correct. We could have a beautiful vaccine like the measles vaccine or rubella that you get once or twice in your life and you're immune for the rest of your life. On the other hand, as you pointed out, with influenza vaccines, we're looking at having to give those year after year. And with coronavirus, we just don't have any experience with existing vaccines to make any good predictions based off of.
Right. People look back at H1N1, and as I remember, a vaccine came around fairly quickly, but that was a kind of flu. We have a lot of experience with flu vaccines. Is there something significantly different enough about this coronavirus that we're in a different ballpark there?
Well, I think the really important aspects really involve with how long immunity is going to last after either an infection with SARS-CoV-2 or after a vaccine. And this, again, is something we don't have a whole lot of knowledge about. It turns out that the virus causing COVID-19 has a couple cousins that are in common circulation across the country and here in Wisconsin. And unfortunately, when people come down with these two coronaviruses, they will develop antibody, but it's not protective for more than 1 or 2 years.
So if we don't have a vaccine, say, for a year or 18 months, some people talk about the idea of herd immunity, where enough people, a high enough percentage in the population has had the illness, has antibodies for X amount of time. Is there a point where that helps us slow the spread of the disease just by that herd immunity?
Absolutely. The number of people in a population that are not immune really serve as the fuel for the epidemic. And as more and more people become infected and recover and have some immunity, it will tend to slow things down. So we have a couple situations where we know, or at least have an idea of how much immunity is out there. I just recently saw a study out of New York where New York City, where 14% of people have signs of antibody to this virus. Another study in, I believe, Santa Clara, California, it's about 4 to 5%. Unfortunately, with this virus, you need to be somewhere up in the mid-50s to 70% of the population being immune before it goes away.
And the obvious downside there is a percentage of those people a long way to getting immunity. A lot of people are going to die first before we get to that situation.
Yeah, unfortunately, with this particular virus, as you just heard in your news clip, 257 Wisconsinites have already died of this. And that's compared to about 140 people this entire last year from influenza in the state. So even in this short period of time, we've really seen an incredible toll.
We're talking to Dr. Jonathan Tempte, Associate Dean for Public Health and Community Engagement at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, looking at possible futures for the novel coronavirus in the United States and here in Wisconsin. I want to give a listen to Dr. Anthony Fauci speaking yesterday on the White House Coronavirus Task Force conference. He talked about the chances of a second wave of the virus later this year, fall or winter. Here's a listen to some of what he had to say.
We will have coronavirus in the fall. I am convinced of that because of the degree of transmissibility that it has, the global nature. What happens with that will depend on how we're able to contain it when it occurs. And what we're saying is that in the fall, we will be much, much better prepared to do the kind of containment compared to what happened to us this winter.
Can you talk about the possibility, the likelihood, almost certainty, according to Dr. Fauci there, of even if this thing fizzles out some now, a likely resurgence in the fall?
Well, I think he is totally correct here that this is what a number of us are planning for at this point in time. Basically, everything we do right now helps to buy us time for the eventuality of this coming back in the fall. But at this point in time, there's a great deal of effort being done looking at, as I mentioned previously, the vaccines, but we don't anticipate those being available probably for another year yet. But the other things are antiviral drugs and things that are being pioneered. For example, the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine Public Health is one of the sites for testing the convalescent serum. So taking blood products from an individual who has been infected and using the protective chemicals or antibodies in that serum to protect another individual. But we need to buy that time to develop good, safe, and truly effective interventions. And they're not really truly effective until we know that they have been tested and have the appropriate scientific basis for making that type of claim.
One fear about that return in the fall and next winter is that in one sense, we got lucky this time that this didn't take off. COVID-19 didn't take off until really the flu season had wound down. The idea that if we have a resurgence of novel coronavirus as the flu season is kicking into high gear, what would be the worries there for our healthcare system if that happened?
Well, every year we get overrun with cases of influenza. And if you add on top of that the amount of additional disease caused by COVID-19, it could really just overrun our capacity very quickly. Now, I've worked with influenza and studied influenza for the past 25 years, and this is something I'm very familiar with. But I have to admit that once Wisconsin schools were closed on the 18th of March, influenza disappeared within days. It was just dramatic, the effect that we saw across our state with school closure. Now, SARS-CoV-2 is a different virus. It's going to behave differently. We don't know what the role of school closure really is with SARS-CoV-2, but for influenza, it worked very, very good. We'll just have to see what happens between these two viruses if they're in circulation together.
Right now, we're waiting for the vaccine. That's going to be a while yet. As you mentioned, possible treatments going to be a while yet. It seems like the question now is, how do we go from this big, broad shutdown approach to that containment approach where mostly we get back to business, but we have the testing in place, the contact tracing in place, to where we can have a more fine-tuned mini shutdown where we need it? How do we get there from here?
One word, testing. And that testing has to be robust. It has to be all over. And we have to have a low threshold to test. Currently, our testing is really limited to individuals who are symptomatic or people who are of high consequence Or to some extent now we've relaxed and we're starting to test people who are going into the hospital for elective surgery. Some places are testing women coming in labor. But we have to become much more likely to test virtually anybody for low cause to be able to identify those cases. And then, as he had mentioned, do the necessary contact tracing. Who has this person been exposed to? Put forth the effort for isolation of those cases that are positive, making sure the people around them understand what needs to be done to stop transmission. Think about quarantining individuals who have been exposed but have not started having any symptoms or are negative with testing at this point in time. So there's a lot of public health measures that actually really do work, but they're predicated on having enough of that testing out there.
Dr. Tapdy, thanks a lot for joining us again today.
And it's been a real pleasure. You take care now.
You too. That's Dr. Jonathan Tapdy, Associate Dean for Public Health and Community Engagement at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He talked with us about what it's going to take to get the COVID-19 outbreak more or less safely under control.